What's up, everybody? It's Mandalore the Esquire here. Welcome to the show. Before we get started, I'd just like to once again lay out the groundwork for what's about to happen in this episode and the ones to come after. Basically, if you did not watch the previous episode, what I'm going to do over the next 4 or 5, maybe even 6 episodes, is come up with a plan to reintroduce Galen Merrick, the Starkiller from Force Unleashed 1 and 2. You only really need a player have watched one to really understand and appreciate him, but I'm gonna find a way to bring him into Star Wars canon and not just have him, you know, be there as he was in Force Unleashed. Like, he was just an anomaly. He just, you know, he kind of stuck out, and he, for someone so powerful, he served an important role, but I think he can serve, you know, basically he can be on equal parity to Anakin and Ahsoka in terms of their power level and importance in the current canon. And I think there is a way to do it correctly. So before we can even discuss that, I need to provide you the ingredients to my argument. I need to give you the underlying facts. And the first thing we need to talk about is Mortis. Who was the father? Who was the son? Who was the daughter? As they're introduced in the Clone Wars and later brought up again in Rebels. So that's what these first two episodes are going to be dedicated towards. This particular episode will touch upon episodes 15 and 16 of the third season of Clone Wars. And those episodes' names are Overlords and Altar of Mortis. So spoiler alert, if you've not seen the Clone Wars and you wish to see this pretty amazing and important arc yourself, we're going to be going heavily upon what happens, who the people are, and the importance of them in the Star Wars canon, and how some of the holes left behind in that important arc can be used to introduce Galen Merrick, the Starkiller. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to start off with episode 15. We'll take a brief intermission, and then we'll go into episode 16 of season 3 of the Clone Wars. And there we go. Let's get started. Episode 15, Season 3 of the Clone Wars. Episode, Overlords. From out of the blue, the Jedi receive a message transmission which includes a 2,000-year overly long outdated Jedi distress code. Obi-Wan Kenobi, Anakin Skywalker, and Ahsoka Tano are sent out to the Krillithian system, where the call was picked up, to investigate. They are at a rendezvous with the Star Cruiser commanded by Rex. But even though they are at the exact coordinates, they cannot perceive each other. Then, communication and power is suddenly cut off, and an irresistible force pulls the Jedi shuttle into a gigantic, crystal-shaped structure. The next thing the three know, they are awakening within the cockpit of their shuttle, which has inexorably settled down in an unfamiliar world. As they survey the landscape, which somehow is removed from the natural laws they are familiar with and strangely radiant with the Force, Anakin is suddenly addressed by a disembodied female voice, which neither Obi-Wan nor Ahsoka are able to hear. The speaker shortly reveals herself, calling herself Daughter, asking Anakin repeatedly whether he is the One, and offering to take them to her father. With little alternative, the Jedi take Daughter up on the offer. As they walk along a cliff path, a rock suddenly collapses in front of them, cutting Anakin and Daughter off from Ahsoka and Obi-Wan. Proclaiming that this was the work of her brother, Daughter asks Anakin to wait, but Anakin instead opts to follow her, sending Obi-Wan and his Padawan back to the ship and try to contact help. The two arrive at the landing site just as night falls, only to discover the shuttle gone. They are immediately after met by Sun, who asks Obi-Wan whether Anakin is really the Chosen One, With a storm coming, Sun departs, and the Jedi are forced to seek shelter in order to not be struck down by lightning. But from his shelter, Anakin spots the light of a monastery located on the high peak of a mountain. As soon as the storm has passed, Anakin hastens up to the monastery and enters a great hall in which he meets an old man meditating. The old man tells Anakin is to be tested to see whether he is fit to fulfill his destiny as the One, and he invites him to stay for the night. In the meantime, however, to his immense surprise, Obi-Wan is met by the Force spirit of his late master, Qui-Gon Jinn, who tells him of the strange properties of the planet as a conduit for the Force, and of its inhabitants' intentions with Anakin, and warns him that the planet may corrupt Anakin if he is unable to attain balance within his soul. At the same time, Anakin is visited in his quarters by an apparition of his mother, Shmi Skywalker, and in his pain, Anakin tells her about his past failures and the guilt which has built up in him. The apparition tells him that Anakin is torn because he has defined his own guilt over the massacre of the Sand People and his secret marriage to Padme. And when he confronts her, she briefly assumes a monstrous appearance before disappearing. Ahsoka also receives a vision, this time from her future self, who warns her to remove herself from Anakin, lest his tendency towards the dark side will eventually corrupt her as well. Anakin angrily confronts his host, demanding answers and believing him to be a Sith Lord. The old man introduces himself and his children as Force wielders, being so strong in the ways of the Force that they cannot dwell in the material world anymore. As a result, they retreated to this planet to contain their powers by attaining balance within and cutting off any influences from the outside world. He promises Anakin that he and his friends are free to leave this world once Anakin has undergone a test, for the old man to see whether he is truly the Chosen One, and for Anakin to confront his own guilt. The next morning, Anakin undergoes his trial in the face of an impossible choice. Son and daughter have kidnapped Ahsoka and Obi-Wan as they went looking for him, and Anakin has to choose which one he will save. Anakin uses the planet's force amplifying properties to force son and daughter to release their captives and at the same time return to their human forms. The old man tells Anakin that while he has passed the test, he must still learn about the true nature within himself, and asks Anakin to take his place as the balancing element between his children, or otherwise endanger the galaxy with his selfishness if he leaves. But because there is an ongoing war, and because Anakin has a wife to go back to, Anakin ultimately chooses to leave, but is strangely hesitant to do so. And as he leaves, the audience can hear the Imperial March play as his ship leaves the planet. Okay, so that was Overlords from the Clone Wars TV show. It is episode 1 of 3 regarding the Mortis beings. And as you can tell, they are very, very powerful in the Force, so much so that they're capable of besting Obi-Wan, Ahsoka, and putting Anakin in a position where he actually feels vulnerable and unsure of his place, you know, given that he is the Chosen One and his midichlorian count is the highest of perhaps any being in the Star Wars universe at this time. So these people are very, very interesting in the context of not only just the Clone Wars, not only in the life of Anakin Skywalker, but in Star Wars as a whole, just by implication of their existence. And some key takeaways that I think you should take note of before we proceed. First thing is, you see that there are avatars. In the father, the son, and the daughter are all avatars of something. The father is the avatar, the representation of balance within the Force. The daughter is the representation of light, the light side of the Force. And the son is the representation of the dark side. The beings all presumably are related by blood, as, you know, they refer to each other as father, son, and daughter. And but we don't know for sure, because if you see the TV show, you can see that they all appear very different in terms of physicality and their abilities, and obviously due to their affinities to their respective sides of the Force. But nevertheless, as we mentioned in the very first episode, family is not who you're related to by blood, but it's more of who you associate yourself with and who you surround yourself with. And regardless of blood relations, you have a father figure who has a daughter figure, and then you have the son figure, and they all acknowledge, the son and the daughter acknowledge each other as siblings. Even though they are warring siblings, they are siblings nevertheless, and they both understand that this, the old man, that this person with presumably a bit more power than them is their father. Also to take note is that even though the father is the avatar of balance, he wants Anakin to become the new avatar of balance. He wants Anakin to become the new father figure, if you will, the person in the middle representing control, representing balance in the Force, controlling the war between the son and the daughter, the war between the light side and the dark side. So that in effect begs the question, do the daughter and the son have avatars of their own? Sure, we know they represent the light side and dark side respectively, but what about their corporeal avatars? The father, who is an ethereal and presumably omnipotent being, wants Anakin to be the corporeal avatar. So what about the daughter? And what about the son? Another thing to take note of is that both the son and the daughter can shift forms. They appear most times in a humanoid form, but they are very capable of transforming into animal-like creatures. The daughter, who I think we should pay most attention to, at least in this point, one of her forms is that of the Morai, which is a female Convor, which is essentially a Star Wars version of a mix between a, you know, a parrot and an owl. And they have long tails. And that is probably as accurate as I can describe it by way of voice. But nevertheless, as you can see in this TV show and these episodes and in the episodes, well, the TV show and the episodes to follow, you'll see that the Morai is either the embodiment of the daughter herself or is meant to be a representation of the daughter. Nevertheless, it is associated very strongly with the daughter. Final thing I think you should take note before we begin the next episode, or the next read-through of the next episode in the Clone Wars Mortis arc, is the voice actors. So obviously we don't have the voice actors on here, and you are listening to my voice. However, I think this is getting into the meta aspect of approaching Star Wars and approaching an episode and that sort of stuff. But nevertheless, I think it is pretty interesting. The daughter is played by, I think you pronounce it Adrian or Adrian Wilkinson. She plays a Jedi apprentice in what's the name of that Jedi? Shaak-Ti in the Force Unleashed video game. And she eventually falls to the dark side and is slain by none other than Galen Merrick, the Starkiller. So already I want you to start noticing connections between the Force Unleashed games, these episodes regarding Mortis, and what is going through Dave Filoni's mind. Because I'm sure he knew, he had some knowledge that this voice actress was in The Force Unleashed. That can't be coincidence. Not to say that that Jedi, I don't even know her name, that's how I think inconsequential she is. That Jedi from The Force Unleashed is meant to be an avatar of the daughter, but it's just showing that, you know, you have the voice actor from this part of the Star Wars franchise, from Legends, and he is now incorporating some aspect of that into canon. Most importantly, the voice of the son is voiced by none other than the voice of Galen Merrick, the Starkiller, Sam Witwer, who also is the voice of Maul in The Clone Wars and Rebels, and he was also the voice of Palpatine in The Force Unleashed video games. So already, once again, Dave Filoni knew that Sam Witwer came from The Force Unleashed. He knew that his most known role at the time for Star Wars was from The Force Unleashed games. His voice is very, it's not James Earl Jones unique, but it is distinct in that if you hear his voice, if you hear Maul speak, if you hear the son speak, you're like, Starkiller? So you got people from Force Unleashed being imported into this episode, into playing these roles, and here I am trying to tell you that this is pretty much the building blocks to how Galen Merrick fits in the new canon, to how we can introduce him, and I think it's very telling. I think this not only makes my theory just a theory, but I think it is pretty much a forecasting, if you will, of how Dave Filoni will intend, if he does, but how he may intend to bring in Starkiller into the new canon. So with that said, and with those thoughts in mind, I now bring to you the next episode of this arc, The Altar of Mortis. Episode 16, Season 3 of The Clone Wars. Episode, Altar of Mortis. As Anakin, Obi-Wan, and Ahsoka are about to leave Mortis's world, Anakin, while resting from this morning's ordeal, has a disturbing dream in which he finds himself back in the planet. What appears to be a mirror image of himself approaches him, only to reveal itself as the sun, who asks Anakin to join him on the dark side of the Force and restore peace and justice and balance in the galaxy. When Anakin refuses and turns away, the sun turns into a monster and attacks him, jerking him awake. Ahsoka walks into the room meanwhile. Suddenly, the ship tilts and starts rocking wildly. But just as Anakin prepares to join Obi-Wan at the controls, the sun suddenly appears behind them, kidnaps Ahsoka, and jumps out of the shuttle. He shifts into a gargoyle form and flies off with Ahsoka in his talons. Running into the cockpit, Anakin took over and chased after the sun into a canyon of mist-shrouded rock spires, but the sun puts on a burst of speed and disappears into the mist. Anakin flies even faster, and instead comes upon a strange tower supporting a huge glowing sphere. Just narrowly avoiding a collision with the structure, Anakin is unable to control the shuttle, and it crash lands back on the planet, in an area dominated by darkness. In the distance, they can both clearly see the tower with the glowing sphere on top of it. Obi-Wan assumes that's where the sun had Ahsoka. Claiming it was his fault that the sun had taken Ahsoka, Anakin prepares to go for the tower. But Obi-Wan holds him back, desperately cautioning him not to let himself get lured into an obvious trap, lest it would yield catastrophic consequences. He suggested consulting the father about how to proceed, but Anakin nevertheless leaves for the tower. While Obi-Wan ponders how to reach the father in the first place, he suddenly finds himself very close to the monastery. Inside her prison cell within the tower, Ahsoka tries to free herself. She hears a voice, and then she finds herself in the company of a creature which addresses her innermost doubts and fears. It questions where her master is and claims that he will never come. Ahsoka snaps that Anakin will rescue her. It releases her from her chains. It tries to convince her to forget her master. But seeing that she will not willingly turn, it bites her in the arm. Clutching her arm, Ahsoka collapses on the floor. The creature morphs back into its true form, the sun. His bite now infects Ahsoka with the dark side of the Force, and she undergoes a horrifying change. The son thereafter joins his father and sister. The father expresses worry about the son's descent into the dark side and implores him to let go of it, whereupon the son lets loose with his anger and blasts the father with Force lightning just as Obi-Wan arrives. The daughter, who had heard the fight, ran to help her father. Upon the father's sickbed, Obi-Wan implores daughter to assist him in stopping the son before he escapes the planet. But the daughter, saying it is not the son's fault, as that is his nature, refuses to raise her hand against her brother. Upon his suggestion that she and Anakin should combine their powers to stop him, the daughter instead leads him to a cavern which contains an altar holding a blade formed by pure Force, which Obi-Wan is meant to wield against her brother. Meanwhile, Anakin manages to scale the sun's tower and finds Ahsoka waiting for him. Unfortunately, he discovers that she is corrupted by the dark side. The sun infused her with a part of his own soul, bringing out her insecurities and resentments along with her more aggressive tendencies. She leaves Anakin a message: either join the sun or the sun will kill Ahsoka. When Anakin dismisses the threat, she ignites her lightsaber and viciously attacks him. Obi-Wan and daughter confront the sun in his innermost sanctum, but he manages to separate them by directing Obi-Wan into assisting Anakin. As Obi-Wan arrives, Ahsoka turns and activates her Shuto and begins to attack them both. During the fight, Anakin turns to Obi-Wan, knowing that they cannot defend themselves for long without either harming Ahsoka or her eliminating them. Obi-Wan then pulls out the Mortis dagger he received from the cave altar and suggests they free Ahsoka from the sun's influence. Ahsoka, angered and knowing exactly what they have, continues fighting the Jedi to get the blade from Obi-Wan. Meanwhile, the son and the daughter begin a duel, using their Force powers to overpower each other. They later began shifting in and out of their beast forms. Soon, however, they were interrupted by the recovered father, who hurls them among the Jedi. The son turns his anger against his father, who is unable to prevail against him and is still weak in state. During the whole ordeal, Ahsoka got up and smirked as the son used Force lightning on the father. Obi-Wan throws the dagger to Anakin, but Ahsoka dives, catches it in midair, then runs up to the son and hands it right to him. The son thanks her and claims she is no longer useful to him anymore. The son taps her on the forehead, removing her life force and therefore killing her instantly. Her lifeless body collapses to the floor as her lightsaber rolls out of her limp hand. Enraged, Anakin lunges at the son, but is repelled by the Force. The son then turns and prepares to plunge the dagger into his father, but the daughter steps in front of the father, taking the blade instead. She is mortally wounded. Screaming with sudden anguish, the son flees the scene as Anakin rushes to Ahsoka's side, only to find her eyes completely rolled back. With the daughter dying, the balance of the Force is now upset, and the planet begins to descend into eternal darkness. Anakin, kneeling beside Ahsoka's lifeless body, begs father to help her. Daughter uses Anakin as a conduit to channel the last of her life force into Ahsoka, removing the darkness within her, bringing her back to life. Ahsoka awakens, weak, but alive. Anakin hugs his apprentice and asks if she is all right, only to find out that she remembers nothing of what happened to her. The father implores the Jedi to leave before the son can take their ship to escape the planet, and warns them that with the balance of the Force now disrupted, the dark side and the Sith will gain the upper hand in the galaxy. Unable to do anything else, the three Jedi leave the mournful father by the son of his daughter. Okay, so that was episode 16, season 3 of The Clone Wars, Altar of Mortis. I hope by now you are beginning to see some connections between this arc and The Force Unleashed and Galen Merrick, and if not, that is perfectly fine. This is something that's been percolating in the back of my mind for years, and it is only until now, and I feel incredibly blessed that I have the opportunity to present my my perspective, my theories, my speculations, my voice to you all, and I am beyond blessed that you are listening and you've made it this far, so thank you. Just some notes that I believe you should be made aware of before we close this episode is, notice how the son is incredibly desperate to be free of the father. Again, we do not know if they are related by blood, if they are biologically related. Nevertheless, they are a father and son figure, and the son is so desperate to be free of the control of his father that he is willing to kill him for it. And again, the son is played by Sam Witwer, and I'm not going to say more than that. We'll leave the rest of that speculation for another day. Notice that during the fight between the daughter and the son, both of them were fighting all out, using their force powers, turning into beasts, and none of them were able to get the leg up on each other. Not when both are aware of each other, not when both are at the height of their powers, not when they are both in a one-on-one mano-a-mano match. The only reason that the son was able to kill the daughter was because the daughter was put in a position where she had to risk her life to save her father. It wasn't a fight at that point, it was a decision to step in and save a life. But when the two were fighting, they were fighting as equals. They, as the daughter and son of the father, are equals to each other, even though their affinities to the Force completely differ. The final note I would like for you to take note of is that you have two figures who are in the process of dying. You have Ahsoka Tano and the daughter. Now, notice in the previous intermission, I asked you to look for avatars. The father wants Anakin to be his corporeal avatar. And in this episode, we see the daughter, with her dying breath, transfer the remainder of her life force into Ahsoka so that she may live. Now, this may be a bit too on the nose, but I think this is supposed to literally show that Ahsoka is living, that the daughter is living on through Ahsoka now. Whether Ahsoka is now officially the new daughter figure, whether she is officially the corporeal figure of the daughter, she is nevertheless important to the daughter. And I think, and I'll just posit it right now, that Ahsoka is meant to represent the daughter in this Mortis triumvirate of the father, the son, and the daughter. So you have Anakin being the avatar of balance, being the representation of the father. you have Ahsoka being the representation of the light, being the avatar of the daughter. And now that begs the question, who is the avatar of darkness? Who is the avatar of the sun? I guarantee you it is not Obi-Wan Kenobi. And I do not think it is Palpatine. Palpatine is nowhere mentioned here, nor is he alluded to. I think this is a puzzle with a missing piece, and for many years it has been left unsolved, and it is going to be our duty to find the missing piece. And if we can't find it, we're going to make one. And we're going to do it by introducing a character we all know and love, Galen Merrick, the Starkiller. All right, with that said and that done, I would like to thank you all for your time once again. I am enjoying podcasting so far. As you can tell, since my previous episode just came out yesterday, and this is probably the longest episode I have ever done thus far, I am very excited to continue. I would love some feedback. I am interested in putting this podcast onto YouTube, probably just importing the audio and then putting some imagery so that you can follow along. So that way, if I want to discuss what a Convor is or what a Morai is, you will actually be able to see a picture of that. But that is just in the back burner. If I do that, you will be the first to know. I am also interested in starting a Twitch channel, focused mostly on Star Wars games, but there's only so many Star Wars games you can play. And let's be frank, there are many, many great, beautiful sci-fi and just in general, there are many great games out there, which I would love to show and broadcast to you all. But with that said, I am going to close this episode. Thank you so much, and have a nice day. May the Force be with you always.